KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, those sneaky herring showed up unexpectedly in Togiak on Sunday, taking everyone by surprise. The spring king season is underway in Southeast, and taking an overview of fisheries management classes on the road. All coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Well, the Togiak herring fishery opened Sunday, the earliest date on record. The herring showed up unexpectedly last week and have already begun to spawn all over Bristol Bay's northern coast. As KDLG's Dave Benninger tells us, Fish and Game, the processors, and the fleet got caught flat-footed and are hustling to try to make it a season.
No matter which aspect of this herring fishery you look at, 2016 sets a new record. First date the biomass was spotted coming into the district used to be April 19th. First date spawn was observed. It was April 23rd. Earliest that commercial effort got underway, in 1980 and 2003, harvests were recorded on April 25th. Last week, private pilots flew in with the news that not only were the herring here, but they were already spawning all over the place. Fish and Game Area Management Biologist Tim Sands flew a survey Sunday, documented 37 miles of spawn, and opened the seiners and gill netters to commercial effort by the evening.
It's a real head-scratcher for us as far as much spawn has been reported being seen and where the spawn's happening. But there's clearly enough fish around to spawn all those places. So we opened it up. I know there's a little bit of a storm coming, so that might delay things further. But it's open now, so people can go when they're ready, and we'll just see what happens.
The problem is, neither the fleet nor their buyers are on the fishing grounds yet. Gillnetters like Frank Woods were hoping to leave Dillingham by the end of this week and get over there several days ahead of time.
Frustration. That's all I got to say is everybody's trying to play catch-up right now, and interesting for sure.
Sea surface temperature plays an important role in the timing of the Togiak herring's spring migration to the spawning grounds along the coast. A month ago, the department cautioned stakeholders that the warm sea surface temperatures and low sea ice levels were so far from normal that predicting the run timing would be impossible. Purse Seine skipper Robert Hyeno says the herring are fickle, but no one was expecting this.
You know, they say they're pretty sensitive to water temperature, so I'd have to think that that had a large part to do with it. You know, last year it was fairly warm, but it wasn't really that early. I think we fished on the 29th, so.
Hyeno's fished for Togiak herring since 1978. By and large, this is a month of May fishery. He was hustling his crew for a Sunday afternoon departure from Dillingham for the day-long trip to the grounds, hopeful that his processor was getting its act together quickly, too. Hyeno was a little upset by circumstances he thinks could have been prevented.
I think the big thing that's disappointing is, from what I understand, there's very little or no money that the state has budgeted for this fishery. So the largest, herring fishery in the state of Alaska? That's very disappointing, you know, and then you listen to what they're doing down in Juneau, and they're talking about buying an office building and reluctance to reduce tax credits and things like that, but they can't put a few dollars in a herring fishery.
Fish and Game did cut all funding for Togiak herring management this year, down from about $30,000 last year, which is still way down from a heyday 15 years ago or so. A private industry donation of $10,000 will allow area manager Tim Sands a couple of survey flights. Would he have flown to spot for herring sooner had the funding been there?
You know, based on the sea surface temperature and everything like that, we probably would have considered flying, especially after we heard some reports of seals with fish in their bellies and stuff like that. I guess the short answer is certainly budgetary constraints are a factor in what we're doing.
There aren't many participants in the Togiak herring fishery these days. Just 21 seiners and 3 gill netters signed up, expecting a price around $50 a ton. Whether they and their buyers get to the grounds in time to find some mature fish with good roe will get sorted out this week. Most say they'll still try. As one skipper put it, when the going gets weird, the weird get going. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
Well, we're not quite sure what this might mean for salmon this summer, but the Middle Kuskokwim Villages reported over last weekend that river ice is moving out in what's expected to be the earliest Cusco breakup on record. Bethel Search and Rescue Chief Mike Riley posted on his group's Facebook that the Kuskokwim River ice around Aniak, Napiamute, Chuathbalak, and Kalskag was moving around 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. According to the National Weather Service's breakup database, the earliest breakup at Kalskag was April 22nd in 1940. Those records go back to 1938. Riley says the ice should be completely out from the Middle River downstream soon.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
The Southeast Alaska king salmon quota for 2016 is out, and it's already looking better than last year. In 2015, no final harvest limit was ever announced, which left commercial fishermen in the dark as to how many fish they were targeting. KCAW's Brielle Schaefer tells us more.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced this week that the harvest limit will be 355,000 kings for all gear types, commercial and sport. That's nearly 18,000 above the allowable harvest from last year. Patty Scannis is Fish and Game's regional troll management biologist in Sitka. She says the higher number speaks volumes.
They indicate that we have a good abundance of fish, and I expect that we'll have a good season coming up. I expect that we will be able to fish in both July and August.
Last summer, Southeast commercial trawlers only fished for kings during one 8-day opening in July. Scannis says it was an unusual year.
The harvest was of a size that didn't allow a second opening.
The quota is based on a combined forecast of U.S. and Canadian Chinook runs, set forth under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. Fish and Game didn't announce a final quota last year because the Pacific Salmon Commission, which implements the U.S.-Canada Pacific Salmon Treaty, could not agree on an estimate of returning kings. When they did come to an agreement, Alaska challenged the commission, saying their estimate was too low, but eventually agreed to fish under those numbers to remain in compliance. According to Fish and Game, the actual returns of Chinook salmon last summer exceeded forecasted levels. Scannis says the harvest quota only includes hatchery-produced fish not from Alaska, also known as treaty fish.
We get fish and we harvest fish that are treaty fish that count against us towards our quota, but we also catch our own Alaska hatchery-produced fish along with them, and most of those don't count towards our treaty quota. In other words, they're almost like fish, bonus fish. We can catch them in addition to those treaty fish that we catch.
On average, she says, there are 60,000 bonus fish from Alaska hatcheries each year. The Southeast King fishery is made up of different stock groups originating from rivers in Canada, Washington, and Oregon. And Scannis says the returns are looking good for the stocks that Southeast tends to harvest. The summer commercial troll quota will be announced closer to July after the harvest from winter and spring fisheries is subtracted from the troll treaty allocation of 263,197 Chinook. Commercial and sport fishermen are not allowed to keep kings that are less than 28 inches long. Fish and Game also recently updated sport fishing regulations, increasing the resident bag and possession limit from 2 to 3 kings for this season. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Brielle Schaefer.
The Southeast spring troll season for kings opened at 12:01 a.m. last Friday morning. This weekend, a Sitka Fisheries Technology professor is bringing his class across the Gulf of Alaska to Kodiak. Joel Marcus, an assistant professor of fisheries with University of Alaska Southeast, will be holding a fisheries management lab in the classroom and in the field. He says the course is suited for people with a wide variety of goals and interests in fisheries management.
It's geared toward, you know, people that might be interested in fisheries management or interested in, you know, potentially enrolling in some sort of program to get involved in fisheries. But also to, you know, we've got students all over the state that are taking sort of the lecture portion of this class that, you know, is going to focus in a little bit more detail on some of the academic sides of things. And this will focus on the hands-on stuff, what we put in waders on and wading around in the stream and hopefully not getting too wet. But that's part of it too, right?
Marcus said the weekend lab will look at several methods of fisheries management used around Alaska.
what the course focuses on is we teach a regular classroom portion of this that we distance deliver all over the state that talks about the different things that fisheries managers use as tools to try and understand the fisheries better. And so everything from how do we figure out about the habitat that actually the fish live in to actually some of the techniques we use to capture fish. And then once we have these fish captured, how can we handle them safely, collect some scientific information from them, all with the idea that this will inform us to better be able to manage the fisheries in the state.
Day one of the course will be in a classroom, but the weekend will be out in the field, near and in the water.
We're going to spend 2 days focusing on freshwater habitats, and then we'll spend a day in the marine habitat. And the idea is that, you know, we'll be catching fish in both the freshwater and marine habitats and talking about, you know, salmon and salmonid species, but, you know, with the thought that, you know, you can apply a lot of the techniques and skills to marine species like herring and halibut and rockfish, lingcod, all sorts of stuff.
The Fisheries Technology Program from the University of Alaska Southeast that Marcus is a part of is geared towards workforce development that offers occupational endorsements, certificates, and associate degrees.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
A fisherman on a Dutch Harbor-based trawler died last week. KUCB's Greta Mart reports that while fishing the Bering Sea is no longer the deadliest job, there's no guarantee port has gotten any safer.
The trawler named Margaret Lynn returned to Dutch Harbor from a fishing trip on April 10th. The following night, 35-year-old Matthew Warren was out at the Norwegian Rat Saloon drinking PBRs. In the morning, his vessel captain realized Warren was missing and started looking for him around town. But a hat belonging to the crewman was found on the dock.
And that combined with some information that officers obtained from the captain, other crew, taxi drivers that they talked to, they put together that it was quite likely he had returned to the dock early in the wee hours of the morning.
Unalaska Deputy Police Chief Jennifer Shockley says when the captain alerted police, the search was focused on the marina from the start. Police brought in commercial divers who recovered Warren's body from under Carl E. Moses Boat Harbor's B dock around 7:30 p.m. Tuesday.
This is the kind of tragedy that we see, I want to say, probably about every 2 years. Sometimes we find people who are reported missing, sometimes we don't. Almost all the times that we have a situation like this where somebody falls into the water in the night, we almost never have anybody who saw anything, which is, you know, part of the reason why they end up this way.
Shockley says Warren's father called to receive the news. Not much else is known about Warren other than he lived in Anchor Point, Homer, and Fairbanks at various times in his life. He had been fishing on the Margaret Lynn for about a year. Reporting in Unalaska, I'm Greta Mark.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KDLG's Dave Bettinger in Dillingham, KCAW's Brielle Schaefer in Sitka, KUCB's Greta Mark in Unalaska, and KYUK's Charles Enoch in Bethel. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.